Shiras Ilan Nishmas Ephraim Ben Asher Anshel. So we left off in the previous shiur. We just had one or two nekudas left in terms of the Malacha Kotzin, and then we'll move on to the next Malacha. So we had mentioned that Chazal made a whole series of prohibitions midirabbanan to protect the person from violating the Malacha Kotzin. It's so easy to violate Kotzin. Just walk over the apple tree and pull off an apple. So it's so simple to violate Kotzin. Therefore, Chazal said, one is not supposed to climb a tree on Shabbos and Yom Tov. One's not even supposed to lean on a tree on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Then Chazal said, one's not supposed to ride an animal on Shabbos and Yom Tov because you're afraid. When you're riding an animal, you may come to grab off a branch, hit the animal. You're not even supposed to lean on an animal on Shabbos and Yom Tov. All of these Isurim, it's called a general Hishtamshus, the Mechubar, using things that are connected to the ground, and Hishtamshus, Bali Chayim, using animals, riding animals, etc. These are all subsumed under the heading of the Malacha Gezeiros, the Malacha Kotzer. So we mentioned in the last year that there may be perhaps other reasons why we don't ride animals, maybe the Tchumen issues, the Fizma Hema, sort of other possible issues, but the primary reason that the Gemara Masechet Beitzah gives is all part of the general heading of the Malacha Kotzer. We pointed out already that the Malacha Kotzer and all the Gezeiros and everything apply equally on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though according to some Rishonim, Kotzer and Yom Tov may only be at the Rabbanon, because if I want the apple, I want to eat the apple, so it's Ochel Nefesh. So according to some Rishonim, Minator would actually be Mutter Mikotzer on Yom Tov, but Lamais it's also. Bottom line is either Deraisa or Rabbanon it's also. All the Gezeiros are there, everything is the same, and all the Surim of Baal Chayim and Mechuba, everything applies, Hakam Mikokol, it all applies, Bein B'Shabbos, Bein B'Yom Tov. So every once in a while we do bump into these kinds of shaylas, particularly in terms of issues of mechuba. We mentioned in the last year, one should be careful, kids should not be climbing on trees in Shabbos and Yom Tov, adults should not be leaning on trees in Shabbos and Yom Tov. Chazal said that even something that was placed onto a tree, either intentionally, unintentionally, but before Shabbos, before Yom Tov, whatever the case may be, is you're not supposed to even remove something that was on a tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov. That's also considered to be ishtamshus, that's considered to be using the davar that's mechubal karak, and again, it's also subsumed under the gzera of kotzer. I remember one time I had the shayla that somebody, I remember it was on Shavuos, that I needed keys to get into a certain house, and somebody decided to toss me the keys. So they tossed me the keys, and the keys landed on top of a bush. And once they landed on top of a bush, now I couldn't use those keys anymore. It's awesome that the rabbanon to take something off the bush. It was like a tree. So you're not allowed to take something off of the tree. There is a famous story about the stipler. I can't vouch for the authenticity of the story, but there is a story floating around about the stipler. And when he was as a young man, he was drafted into the Russian army. So it was pretty cold. Russia tends to be cold all times of the year, especially in the army in Siberia. So it was pretty cold. And apparently there was only one coat going around for the guards. So apparently when it came time, the sniper was standing on guard. Now can you imagine the sniper standing on guard in the Russian army on a Friday night? So he goes outside to stand guard, and the Goyish guard was before him. Left the coat for him. He left the coat for him on top of a tree, hanging on a tree or something. So the sniper refused to take the coat. And even though, again, I can't vouch for the authenticity of the story. If you happen to find yourselves in Siberia doing Shmirah, maybe it would be B'Goch Nefer, so I don't want to commit myself to anything about the story. But the way the story goes is the stipler refused to take the coat because he didn't want to violate the system of the Rabbanon of removing something off of a Davar HaMechubar Lekaraka. The Gemara tells us at the very end of Masechta Shabbos that not only you're not allowed to use a davar that's mechubal karak as a gzeirah kotzer, but something that is connected to a davar mechubal karak is also a problem. So let's say you have a tree and you want to hang a hammock onto the tree. So you connect the hammock to one tree, then you connect the hammock to another tree. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to use that hammock either. That's called a tzidei ilan. Even though you're not using the tree mamish, you're not leaning on the tree itself, and it's mechubal to the karak, you're not supposed to lean on it to support your weight on as well. The Gemara says that what you are permitted to do is what's called tzidei tzdadim. And if you have, let's say, I tie a rope, and then I tie something else to the rope. So now, the thing that I'm using is something that's already a separate entity. It's already two different kelim. That gets a little bit tricky. Shishmavis can cause a whole discussion about this. How do you know when it's one kli or two kelim? But it's two separate, distinct kelim that are connected one to another, and then eventually it's connected to the tree. So that would be permissible. So in case you have some tremendous yetzara to use a hammock on Shabbos connected to your tree, so you've got to find out how to do that hammock properly. Or swing sets. Anything that's connected to a tree may potentially be a problem in terms of shimush or mechubal karak. Anyway, those are, again, just the shirayim from last malacha. So we now move on to the next malacha. It's a malacha that we usually don't even think of. It's a fairly short malacha, And that's the melacha of ma'amer. Ma'amer means to gather together. So in the context of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah speaks about what's called Sidur Depas, the Mishnah speaks about the order of making bread. So the Mishnah speaks about plowing and planting and harvesting. And then the Mishnah speaks about when you have all the stuff that's on the ground, all the sheaves that have already been detached, and they have to gather them together. Something like Yosef's dream. You have to gather all the sheaves and tie them all together and collect them into one group. So that's called the Malacha of Ma'amer. That's a Malacha D'Araisa. So there was very, very little in the Gemara about Ma'amer. There's actually one line in the Gemara, the seventh in Shabbos about Ma'amer. Most of the discussion in the Rishon about Ma'amer is from the absence of discussion in Chazal. From the fact that there are certain sugyas that appear where Ma'amer sounds like it should have appeared and it should have played a role, and somehow it's strikingly absent, so the Rishon developed different understandings of what Ma'amer is and what Ma'amer is not. Yet it's not the most common Shaila. I have seen violations of Ma'amer. Actually, we witnessed according to most Rishonim, an absolute Torah violation of Ma'amer, but people had no idea what they were doing. But as you can jump ahead, there were a bunch of kids who were playing in a nice game in the fall time. They decided to gather leaves together, so they made a whole big, big pile of leaves in the backyard, made a big, big pile of leaves, and they were jumping on top of the leaves. So the moving the leaves is only a Nisa Deraban or Muktzah, but the gathering of the leaves into a pile may be a Nisa Deraisa Ma'amer. So you really got to try hard to violate the Isra Ma'amer. It didn't happen here, it happened in another community I was once visiting for Shabbos, and I was supposed to speak at Shal Shudis about a totally different topic. And I asked them, and I saw all the kids Shabbos in the morning playing around and making these piles of leaves and jumping on top of the leaves. So I felt very funny, like I should tell the parents, not tell the parents, say, yeah, well, it wasn't even my shul. So I asked them, do you mind if I change my topic for Shal Shudis? They couldn't care less. So I wasn't such a major, publicity. They said, okay, I'll change my topic. So I spoke to the entire Shal Shudis about the Yisra D'Raisa Ma'amer and why you have to make sure your kids aren't Mishnah on this terrible Malacha D'Raisa. He said, it's like having your kids turn on the lights. It's probably more D'Raisa than the lights, maybe. Depending on. Anyway, so that was my visual watching of Ma'amer. So let's see if we can learn through the Sugi Ma'amer what the Gemara does say about Ma'amer, what the Gemara doesn't say about Ma'amer, and just try to be able to put together the pieces as to what the parameters of this Malacha are all about. So the Gemara talks about Ma'amer in the seventh Berach of Shabbos, in Berach Klal Gadol, and the Gemara talks about almost a strange case of Ma'amer. The Gemara talks about Ma'amer not in the backyard with your leaves or with your grains or with your things growing on the ground. Rather, the Gemara talks about Ma'amer in the context of collecting salt from a salt mine. Those who know enough about collecting salt, myself not included. So apparently, certain places where the water evaporates by itself, and is that right? Am I right? Something like that. And there's and the salt is left behind. But it doesn't go together with eclipses and all that kind of stuff. So there's big piles of salt, and apparently the water. It's on the side of the ocean, that's what Rashi describes it, that the water has evaporated, and now you have these big piles of salt and stuff behind. The Gemara says if a person gathers together all that salt into one pile, so the Gemara quotes one opinion that says that's an Issa D'Raisa of Ma'amer. Just as gathering together the Ma'amer Ma'alumi B'Sech Hasad, the gathering together the sheaves is the D'Raisa, so to the gathering together the salt is D'Raisa as well. The Gemara quotes another opinion that says no, that it's not a D'Raisa because of the famous rule of it's not Gedulei Karka. Since salt doesn't grow in the ground, therefore, by definition, it cannot be a malacha d'araisa. Now, why should that be? So the fact that it doesn't grow in the ground, why should that not make it a d'araisa? So that's what we spoke about already several times, that there are certain malachas that Chazal somehow associated with gedulei karka. That if it doesn't grow in the ground, that's just a different kind of a picture. We spoke a little bit about it vis-a-vis the malacha of kotzer. We referenced it a little bit parenthetically. These are the malach of Dishah, we're going to come back to that later on. In terms of threshing, the threshing, according to many opinions in the Gemara, only applies to Gedulei Karka. So you have this underlying theme in Chazal that certain malachas are limited to things that grow on the ground. Where did this idea come from? What's this based on? So Tosfos throws the hands up and says, it must be, it's some kind of a comparison to Mishkan. It must be that since all of the Chashavas is patterned after the Mishkan, so it must be that Chazal, at least some Tanoim, some Amoraim, some members of Chazal understood that if it's not similar to Mishkan in terms of that characteristic of Gedulei Karka, then it falls short from being Malacha D'Araisa. As we already mentioned a few times, It's very, very tricky. Whenever you focus on Mishkan, whenever you use a Mishkan as a model, so you have to always be very, very wary which parts of Mishkan are relevant and which parts are irrelevant. So let's say nobody would say that, well, the Mishkan was traveling in the desert, so it's your only chayv for Chilul Shabbos if it's above 90 degrees outside. But if it's cold outside, then there's no Chilul Shabbos. The only chayv for Chilul Shabbos if it's a sandy place. If there's no sand under your feet, then there's no Chilul Shabbos. Obviously, there are certain things that are ridiculous, that are absurd, that don't carry over from Mishkan, but certain things do. And now it gets very, very tricky. Which aspects of Mishkan do carry over, which don't? Just as an aside, this is a very, very pivotal issue that affects all of our lives. Every Shabbos, that the only time one is not allowed to carry Minhag Torah on Shabbos is if you have a Rishus HaRabim that's patterned after the Mishkan. So it has to be very, very similar to Mishkan. So how similar to Mishkan is similar? So some Rishonim say, well, if it's the same size, same dimensions, or larger than the Mishkan, so that could be a Rishus HaRabim in the Torah. So in the Mishkan, the Gemara makes a cheshbon that the pathways in between the Agolas, in between the wagons where the traveling was, the roads were 16 amos wide. So some Rishonim say, if you have a road that's 16 amos wide, good. So now you have Rishus HaRabim deraisas, you have a problem. Another Rishonim say, no, that's not enough. It wasn't just that it was 16 amos wide. There were 600,000 people who were there, at least 600,000 men who were traveling on those roads. So if you have a road that happens to be 16 amos wide, but 600,000 people don't generally travel on it, so that's not Dumi the Mishkan, that's not similar to the Mishkan. So other Rishonim say, who made you in charge to making up rules of what's called Dumi the Mishkan? If Chazal said 16 amos, Chazal says the fair, 16 amos is the Shiur. So Mehechatei said, what gives us the right to make up a new klal that has to have the amount of people? And other Rishonim say, no, it's Dumi the Mishkan, that's the way it is. So this is a major, major, major point of contention. Which characteristics of Mishkan carry over in terms of the Malach of Otzah, which don't. The Nafkamina to that Machlaik is a very small Techel Nafkamina. All Erevin in the world basically depend upon that Shaila, because the Gemara says that the way we build Erevin, just strings and Pesach, you know, Tzuras Pesach, just a couple of poles and strings, we call it a day, that only works in an area that's not a Deraisa. If the area would be a Deraisa, so then all bets are off, and Erevin would be Dvar B'Tavim. It would be a waste of time. The only way you could surround the Rishis around the Deraisa, you have to build walls with doors that are closed, the whole different style of building Erevin, which for the most part are not practical. Bergenfield, for sure, they're not practical. And for most Jewish communities, not practical. No one's letting us build walls. I mean, some communities in New Jersey have put up fusses over less things obtrusive than walled and barred and gates. So, love that. We're going to create an Yom Kippur home any one of these days soon. So, we all build our Erevin based on the principles of Tosafot Pesach, which are perfectly legitimate, because the sugya is an Erevin about, provided that we're not dealing with the Deraisa anyway. Why that should be so, why Deraisa precludes the possibility. So that's a whole other story, but not for now. But that's the din. So now everything hinges upon that Nakuda. Is it similar to Mishkan? Not similar to Mishkan. That's a very, very important question. So when it comes to these malachas of Kaitzim, Amir, Dosh, you have the same story, sisters, the same Pizmon, that half the opinions of the Gemara seem to be saying that Kedula Karka is very, very, very important, and half the opinions of the Gemara seem to say it's very, very unimportant. So how do we pass it in the halacha? So it's a machlokes Rishonim, machlokes in the Gemara, machlokes in the Rishonim, and how do we pass it? So most of the Rishonim assume that the malacha deraisa is only violated with Gedula Karka. We assume that Ma'amar is part of the story. It's the same as Kaitzer, the same as Disha, and if it's not Gedula Karka, such a salt, it's not going to be a deraisa. Not being a deraisa doesn't mean that it's mutter. It's still problematic on a level of the Rabbanan, so therefore next time you're in a salt mine and you feel like you want to go collect your salt, so just know that you're in potential violation of this of the Rabbanan. And there's one opinion in Rishon that says it's a deraisa. It says we paskin that yesh ma'ava shlomim gedula karka. And for that matter, those same Rishon say yesh disha shlomim gedula karka. And for that matter, that becomes a major issue about, we're going to talk about this hopefully later on, in the weeks to come, about the whole issue of milk and cows. Now, whether milk and cows is a deraisa or a derabanan is part of this whole story about disha shlomim gedula karka. Is it cow kol gedula karka, not kol gedula karka? This was a million dollar issue that began to crop up in Eretz Yisrael back in the 1920s. This was a major, major, major war that was going on in Eretz Yisrael between different factions. I don't know if maybe the word war is a little bit too much. A major fight, major conflict that was going on in Eretz Yisrael between different factions in the early Yishuv as to whether milk and cows should be treated as a deraisa, maybe treated as a derabanan. What possible term do we have for keeping the cow industry alive in Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos? So again, hopefully we'll talk about that. This is a burning, burning issue 100 years ago in Eretz Yisrael. So getting back to that story, when it comes to the Malach of Amir, so we have the Machlokes, whether we're dealing with the Raisas or the Rabbanans. But when we're dealing with gedulei karka, for sure it's deraisa. A person goes ahead and he collects his leaves, goes ahead and collects his sheaves of grain, any of the above. It sounds like we have an outright deraisa in hands, balishim suffering. That's all the Gemara does say about Ma'amir.
How does it work with snow?
Oh, very good, excellent. So snow is definitely not gedulei karka. So the question is that even in the Rabbanan, are you really gathering the snow together? So usually, when a person is, let's say, shoveling the snow, I wouldn't call that gathering the snow. I would say these kind of, the snow's here, and you're just kind of moving the clump of snow over there. If your person makes the snow, so he actually goes and gathers snow to make his snowballs or a snowman, so he's running into other problems. Besides the maybe issue of the Amir, there may be another problem, Bona. A building, so making snowmen and frosties and all the above off limits.
So piling snow on Shabbos.
So you mean if you're just piling snow and you're not really gathering into one place, you're kind of just pushing it away. So it wouldn't be a malacha mutar. I didn't say outright that it's mutar yet. I said there may be other potential problems, but it's probably mutar if the whole goal is just to get rid of the snow. Okay. So we'll still hold it by the end of December. We haven't had any major. The only snow we had was back in September, whenever it was. But hopefully we'll keep it going.
Where's the line drawn between what you can and can't gather on a level thereof?
Well, we're not sure. We're not sure what some of the other criteria of ma'amer are. So once we figure out the other characteristics of ma'amer, then we'll try to understand.
There's no like purpose for the malacha.
There's no what?
Do you need it for a certain purpose? Like usually we have it.
Means we'll be Lakshan Chikl Gufa. Lakshan Chikl Gufa is only Mata and Lava of the Raisa, but we still have potentially Sukhya Abundant.
Like if you're just gathering leaves, just to play, not
that's a Lakshan Chikl Gufa. I want to use the leaves. If my goal is to rake the leaves to get them out of the way, let's say I have leaves bothering me, they're in the driveway, I can't walk there, and I'm trying to gather the leaves somewhere to get rid of them, that would be a Lakshan Chikl Gufa. If I'm gathering the leaves for usage, so there's no difference whether that usage is to eat the grain or the usage is to play on the leaves. That's good. It's like carrying. The carrying the Mishkan was done to use the crushing for the Vadasa Mishkan. If I carry a sefer to learn from, that's called using a sefer. That would be a deraisa. Throwing out the garbage is a derabana, but using a sefer is a deraisa. So the question becomes about there are two sugyas in Shas that speak about scenarios that we would have clearly expected Ma'amer to appear, and it is mysteriously missing. And the question is, why is it missing? So one is the sugya, actually, the both sugyas of Masechas Beitza. One's earlier in Beitza, one's later in Beitza. In the first breath of Beitza, the Gemara discusses a concept of malacha, but not vis-a-vis Shabbos and Yom Tov, rather a concept vis-a-vis Trumas and Maaseres. There is a halacha that if a person harvests something in Eretz Yisrael, it grows in Eretz Yisrael, so of course he becomes obligated to separate Trumas and Maaseres. The Trumas and Maaseres only kick in when you reach the point of Gemar Malacha. When the item is actually finished, you finish the job, then only there does it become real teva. And even that's not enough. It has to have Gemar Malacha, and then it has to have what's called Rias Pinei Bayis. You have to bring it to the house, up to the backyard, you have to actually bring it home. If you're just eating out in the fields, so then Min HaTorah, it doesn't become Tevel altogether. Midi Rabbanan, it becomes Tevel. Midi Rabbanan, not allowed to eat it. What's called an Achilas Keva. Let's say a person is harvesting out, he's working out in the fields, and he's working on the grain, and then he hasn't yet packed the grain up, hasn't yet brought it home, and he wants to munch a little bit on the grain. So the Mishnah says that he can have an Achilas Aroi. He can take a little bite here and there, a little mashu, but he can't have Achilas Keva. He can't sit down and have a whole meal, even though you haven't brought it home. Yet that's an Issa Midi Rabbanan. Midi Raisa, it doesn't become Tevel until it has undergoes two processes. It has to have Gemar Malacha, and it has to have Rias Pnei Avayis. Those of Eretz Yisrael, those on Moshav Beit Meir, are well familiar with this. That every once in a while, people walk by, they pluck off a fruit or something, pluck off a date, pluck off a figure, something off the tree, and you're allowed to eat that because you haven't had Rias Pnei Avayis, you haven't brought it to your house or your dorm room or whatever the halacha equivalent of a bias is. I didn't say it's a bias, but the halacha equivalent of a bias is. So that would still be permissible. Those who remember the shiur I gave at the end of the summer, so we spoke about going out to the vineyards and collecting the grapes. So we got pictures, we got videos of Mary Yaakov munching away on grapes in the middle of the vineyard because we hadn't had a Chiyuv Pnei Avayis yet. We quite possibly didn't even have Gemar Malacha yet. So Gemar Malacha, finishing the job, does play a critical role in terms of Trumas and Maaseres. So the Gemara tells us that phrase, Gemar Malacha, even though the word is Malacha, don't get mistaken to think that the definition of Malacha for Maaseres is the same as the Shabbos. So the Gemara is quick to say in the end of the first Bech of Beitza that there are certain activities that do constitute Malacha for Trumas and Maaseres purposes, but to fall short in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. So for example, the Gemara says, Asiyas Arema, if you make a pile. So let's say if you're out there in the fields and you just pile up some grain, The Gemara says that's called Gemara Malach Chavaisus. That's how you, those who farmers know. So you pile up the grain and you smooth off the pile, and that's the end of the job. And now you have to transport that to your house. But once you've piled everything up and you've smoothed off your pile a little bit, so that by definition is considered to be the Gemara Malacha for the purpose. That's what the Gemara calls Digun, or the Gemara calls Meruach. All those terms all refer to the same process. That's Gemara Malacha for the purposes of Trumas and Maizus. The Gemara says that would not be Malacha on Shabbos. If you did that in Shabbos, that wouldn't be malacha. So you're just sitting in the backyard and you pile up some grain on top of another and you smooth it out. You didn't do anything wrong. At least in a Torah, that wasn't maybe. It was muktzah. It was about edible. Not edible yet, whatever it is. But in terms of the definition of a real malacha, what you did was not called a malacha. So Rishon say, why not? Isn't that exactly what ma'amar is? Doesn't ma'amar mean to go to your backyard, pile up your stuff together? That is exactly what the malacha ma'amar is. How could the Gemara say so, you know, flippantly? Oh, don't worry, that's called malacha for this area of malacha, but not called malacha for another. Why not? Why isn't that called a malacha? So there's something about the piling up of grain that somehow doesn't lend itself to malachas ma'amar. We're not quite sure what that is. Then there's another sugya. It's actually the Mishnah later on, Sichas Beitza, but the Mishnah talks about collecting wood for the purpose of making a fire in Yom Tov. Now, making fires in Yom Tov is permissible, provided that you don't start a fire. The Mishnah says later on in Beitza, that you're not allowed to be motzias eish from the eitz of min ha'avon. You're not allowed to make a fire from scratch. You're not allowed to rub two sticks, two stones together, or modern-day equivalent. You're not allowed to strike a match on Yom Tov. That's for a totally different reason. That's because of a potential shot of molid. When you bring something new into existence, so that in and of itself is a problem. According to most poskim, that's probably only a problem in the Rabbanan. That it looks like you're creating a davar chadash. That means it looks very, very anti-Yom Tov tikkun style. That your mamish bringing something yesh me'ayin into the world, not literally yesh me'ayin, but figuratively yesh me'ayin into the world. So that's an issa mid rabban of molid of a chadash. That's the reason why we can't strike matches on Yom Tov. That's the reason why we can't turn on our ovens anymore on Yom Tov, for our stovetops on Yom Tov, because the way our stoves and our ovens worked, not like the old days. In the old days, so you had a pilot light, so there was always a little flame there, and then when you turn on the gears, so you're just feeding more gears into the flame. That's perfectly okay. That's like throwing wood into a fire. That's it. What the lechatchila. So now, when I was a little boy, I was hetter gomer to turn on and to turn off is a different story. But to turn on the flame on Yom Tov is hetter gomer. Now, the way most of our stoves and our ovens work is that we have these igniters. So there's nothing there. It's blank, and now you turn it on, so now you're starting something from scratch. So there's a dual problem. First of all, you're doing something electric, which is a problem in and of itself. And number two, you're starting a fire, yesh me'ayim, starting from scratch, and that's an additional problem. Just parenthetically, it's that institution of new non-pilot lights that have started in the last, I don't know, 30 years, whatever it was. So that has caused problems in Uchaz Yom Tov. It's also caused a lot of problems in Uchaz Bishul Acham. In the olden days, so Bishul Acham in people's homes was significantly less of a problem. You lit the pilot light, you bought a new stove, you lit the pilot light, and it stayed for 30 years. So the goyim were cooking right and left, and there was no Bishul Acham problem. So unfortunately, a lot of people got into that mindset. For 30 years, nobody heard of Bishul Acham, because nobody, it wasn't on the radar screen, because it never was a problem, because the Jews were lighting the pilots, and the Mikra did, it was okay. Problem is that everything's changed now, the Metzias is different. So now you have stoves which don't have pilot lights, so the non-Jew comes in and he starts cooking your food for you, so it's mamish treif, that's bishul acham, the cooking the food mitchilin that side. So you have to always be aware that the metzias tends to a change in this world, and the halacha has to respond accordingly. So getting back to the story, so the din is that you're allowed to light fires on Yom Tov as long as you don't light a fire from scratch. So if I want to, let's say I have a fireplace going, so I lit the fire from before Yom Tov, so now I want to put more logs into the fire, no problem, just take my logs and throw them into the fire, what could be wrong? So the Mishnah is not so fast. So the logs can't be muktza logs. What kind of muktza? Why are the logs muktza? I'm going to use them for a fire. It's mutter light. Why should that be muktza? So the Mishnah is not so simple. That the medevim and murim, that firewood and logs are not muktza. That's if they were, if you had in mind, you were going to use them for a fire. If you had, let's say there's a tree somewhere, there's some branches on the bottom of a tree out in the middle of nowhere. So those branches are muktza because you weren't really thinking about them. They weren't on your radar screen. But it's not really a kli. A piece of wood is not a kli. A piece of wood is only usable because you were planning on using it. So you have to be careful when you have wood that you want to throw into your fire. You have to make sure that wood was mukhan mi be'od yom. Even on Yom Tov, Shabbos obviously it's the rice to do that. But even on Yom Tov, when you're allowed to throw wood into the fire, you have to just make sure that it's mukhan. So how do you know whether it's mukhan? So if you went to the store before Yom Tov and you bought yourself these pre-beautiful cut, you know, logs of firewood, and they're sitting next to your fireplace, and now you put the fireplace on before Yom Tov and throw the logs in, because hey, it's for sure okay. Obviously we're making them. But sometimes it's not so simple. Sometimes you want to go into your backyard and start scrounging around for tree branches. Is that called Menamuchan? So the Mishnah goes through all the details. Again, for us, none of this is relevant. No one's doing this. But in the olden days, this was relevant. So you're going into your backyard. What if you're going to? You have an area that's not generally used as a backyard. The place is more of a storage area. Maybe there is wood there. There's not wood there. Back along, the Mishnah gives you all kind of cheshbon. It's about how to go collect the wood, how to get around the problems of Muktzeh Menuchan. Then the Mishnah discusses, and the Gemara elaborates upon, that is there a difference between if the wood is piled up already or the wood is just scattered all over the place? So if it's piled up, so that's more of an indication that you were thinking about it. So that's more of a muchan. If it's just a piece of wood here, a piece of wood there, a branch there, a log here, it's been on a mufuzar, so that's much more of a problem. So the Gemara goes through the intricacies of what is muktzah. It's not muktzah. Like you said, Tanoi, man, and a whole umber in the Masechus Beitz, very, very technical details about how to get around this problem. So on that sugya, there's a three-line Taisus. The Taisus says they don't understand the entire sugya. Taisus says, the Gemara is talking about what seems to be almost a secondary problem. The Gemara is trying to solve a mukta problem. Isn't there a much more profound problem here? Isn't this ma'amer? Namely, you're going to your backyard, and you got a branch here, a branch here, a branch here. You're gathering all the branches together. What happened to ma'amer? Isn't that in Malacha Deraisa? So forget about the intricacies, the details of the Mukta. We have a much more serious problem over here. What happened to Ma'amir? So it's the same kasha that we had in the first Perek Beitza. So in the first Perek Beitza and the fourth Perek Beitza, we have two sugyas that are talking about gathering. They're talking about the worst kind of gathering, things that are growing on the ground. Either the case in the first Perek, the grain, the sheaves of grain that are growing in the ground. The fourth Perek Beitza, the wood that grew in the ground. And in the first Perek, the Gemara says, oh, this is not a malacha. In the fourth Perek, the Gemara says, oh, this is a mukta problem. So the Rishonim ask in the first Perek, then the Rishonim repeat the question in the fourth Perek, what happened to Ma'amr? How come Ma'amr is missing? So that's what I mentioned. There are three sugyas in the Gemara about Ma'amr. One is where Ma'amr appears. That was that half line about Ma'amr and the salt. And then you have two sugyas where Ma'amr should have appeared, and it doesn't appear. So what is the answer to that question? What is the deep, dark secret? Why is there no Ma'amr in the first Perek of Beitza? Why is there no Ma'amr in the wood in the fourth Perek of Beitza? So Taisus has a one-liner. Taisus has it. Does address the fourth Perek, and then on the Rambam, there's one of the Rishon, the Ramach, Rav Moshe Kohen, wrote a Perush on some form of the Rambam. So Rav Moshe Kohen is printed on some of the new Franco Rambam. Some of the Rav Moshe Kohen's is printed. If I'm not mistaken, he was from the Chachmei Lunil. He was from the Chachmei Provence in southern France. And there was a whole Jewish community in southern France. Northern France was the Balei Taisus, Rashi and Taisus. But in the southern France was Lagamri, a different community. The Raivin and the Erie and the whole group of Rishon lived in southern France. So there was a city in southern France called Lunil. So Lunil, they used to call them the Chachmei Lunil. So if I'm not mistaken, I think Rav Moshe Kohen was one of the Chachmei Lunil. And they used to correspond with the Rambam. So Rav Moshe Kohen says vis-a-vis that first sugya in Beitza, and Taisa says they're having the last sugya in Beitza. So from the north to the south of France, everybody's asking if this was the same hot topic in the 1100s in France. No matter where you lived, everyone was talking about the same topic. What happened to Ma'amer? So the Rishonim come up with the following: you said that Ma'amer is only violated by Mokom Gidulo of the item. Only if you're Ma'amer, only if you gather something in the place where that item grew, then and only then is that called Ma'amer. So if you would be going in an area where the trees are growing and there's wood on the floor and you're gathering up that wood, that could be ma'amer. But that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah happens to be talking about the wood is in b'chotzer. So the Mishnah says that the wood has already been taken out of the place where the wood was growing. It's now sitting in the backyard somewhere. Or, I mean, in a backyard with trees, in an area where there are no trees growing. Or the Mishnah says the wood is scattered somewhere in a storehouse somewhere, in a karfif somewhere. So comes Tosis, it comes to Moshe Kohen and says that all the cases in the Gemara where Ma'amr doesn't appear is because it's not the Mokom Gidulo. It's not where the item was growing, and therefore the Malacha Ma'amr doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. Bechlau, finish, end of discussion. That's the answer, that's the deep, dark secret. I think Gemara is talking about piling up grain. Shalom Mokom Gidulo. It's not taking place where Ma'amr grew. If it really, really grew in that area, that would be a Malacha Deraisa Ma'amr. It's Ad Kan Devar Tosis, Ad Kan Devar Moshe Kohen. So this is a big, big pella, this Taisus, this Rav Moshe Kohen, because where do we ever find such a precedent in other malachas? Imagine a person's going to say, well, the malacha of Bishul only takes place in the kitchen. If you happen to be cooking in your bedroom, so that's okay. Malacha, what is such a silly thing? And since when do we find malachas only apply in certain areas, not in other areas? In Sisrei Torah, what kind of story is this that Ma'amar doesn't apply outside of Mokom Gidulo? And if one looks in the Rambam, so there's no mention of this.
That's only according to the
Rambam,
that has to be
to the dark. Oh, wait, no, I didn't even say that yet. And the Rambam doesn't make any mention of this. The Rambam doesn't say, a word that it's only Makom Gedulah. The Rambam quotes the Dinam Amir, very, very short discussion of the Rambam, Amir Derais, Amir Derabani, Gurukarif, etc. The Rambam doesn't make mention of the fact that after the Daphne of Makom Gedulah, implying that that is not true, but that's not necessarily a reason. So, what is the answer according to the Rambam if you deny this Tosis, which again, we don't really understand this Tosis, if you deny this Tosis, deny this Moshe Kohen, so what could the possible answer be? So when the Rambam describes Ma'amer, more in the sense of not just gathering something, but actually gathering together is a little response to Dwayne's issue, gathering and almost making it into one unit, in the sense of that the Rambam describes the person collects his grain and he ties it together. Ma'amim alam sukhasad, that means we're gathering it, we're tying it, we're making it into a unit together. That's the malacha of Ma'amim. But just merely gathering without actually connecting it and tying it and forging a new unit out of it, so maybe that's not called malachas Ma'amim. That would begin to explain things. That would explain what's going on in the first Bech HaBeitza. The Mishnah there, the Gemara there is talking about just piling things up. You pile up grain from today till tomorrow. So piling up grain, smoothing out the pile, that's called malacha for nicest purposes, but that's not called the malacha of Shabbos because you didn't tie it all together. And that's similarly what's going on in the fourth Bech HaBeitza. Also, the guy's walking around and collecting his sticks. According to the Rambam, whether it's happening in the backyard where the trees are growing or not growing, that's irrelevant. The Rambam never heard of this cloud called Mokhav Gidulo. Rather, the Rambam says that if you make it into a pile and you tie it together, you make it into a bundle, tie it together, that's the Malacha Ma'amir. Anything short of that is not considered to be Ma'amir. So we have two different approaches to in the Rishonim as to what is the potential limitations of the Malacha Ma'amir. We have half the Rishonim telling us that Ma'amir is limited to Mokhav Gidulo versus not Mokhav Gidulo. That's Tosfos and the Ramach. Then you have the Rambam, who probably does not accept that, doesn't make mention of that, but the Rambam's description of the Malacha sounds almost like the Rambam is insisting that there's some kind of a forging together, making, tying together in some shape or form.
So you could pile salt with that.
Oh, very good, excellent. So that's what the post can point out. They say, wait a second, what's with the salt story? What happened exactly with the salt? Is the salt like tied together? What does that mean? To make the salt into one unit. What does that concept mean? So there's one of the Rishon, the Maharach or Zerua. The Zerua had a son. His name was Reb Chaim. And Reb Chaim did Or Zerua, so he had his own Shalos HaTshuvos. There's a Sefer Or Zerua, there's Maharach Or Zerua. So Maharach Or Zerua points out this Rambam. He says that the Rambam doesn't seem to mention the significance of Makom Gidulah. And he's the one who's Madaik, that the Rambam seems to focus on the fact that it has to be linked together and forced together and merged together to be a problem. So Maharach Or Zerua asks the question, how does that play out with salt? The Gemara's whole purple about salt. How does the salt merge to become one? So Rav Zerua says, oh, come on, anyone knows anything about collecting salt will know that the salt also merges to become one. So that immediately disqualifies me from knowing anything about the topic. I wouldn't know if I saw it. So he says, yeah, that's also called making into a unit. But if it's not a unit, so then that's not called Ma'amir. So the truth is we have two sister Torahs here. We have two for the price of one. Two mysteries in the Malacha Ma'amir. We have no idea what Tosfos is talking about. Why is it that certain malachas limited to Makom Gidulah? And we have no idea why the Rambam came up with a different idea. We don't even understand that. What kind of nuance does that make a difference? I gathered it, so if I tie it, yeah, I don't tie it. No, what is that all about? What exactly is going on behind Shittas HaTosfos and Ramach? What is going on behind Shittas HaRambam? So hopefully, Mitzvah Shem, next year, we have to get a little bit of a better understanding. What is bothering to be shown about Ma'amar? What is wrong? What is the problem with Malachas Ma'amar? That it's lending itself to these very, very seemingly strange conditions. And we'll try to put together some of the pieces of the puzzle, try to get a little bit of a better understanding of Ma'amar as we develop this.
The kids who were gathering the leaves, they didn't tie it. Was it all from the same?